from the Gothic Quarter in Barcelona. This is Market Movers, the podcast that gives you a closer look at the financial markets to trade responsibly. Here are your hosts, Lior Cohen and Yochai Elam.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us and spreading the good word about the show. This is episode number 33, recorded on Thursday, January 15th. I'm your co-host, Lior Cohen. And joining me, Thomas Jordan from the Swiss National Bank, just became his new BFF, Yochai Elam. How's it going, Yochai?
Hi, Lior. I'm doing great. We're recording it just about an hour or so after the big bomb that we got from the Swiss. It's quite an amazing day. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting news. Finally, huh? So now the governor of SNB will be your new favorite governor of all.
No, I keep Draghi still my favorite, and I think the move today from the Swiss came in response to what Draghi is going to do next week, so...
All right, so enough with all the small talk. Let's just go right to it. So this week, we'll tackle, of course, the Swiss franc and ECB's monetary policy meeting. Next week, tackle Saudi Arabia's oil war with U.S. producers, examine the latest from U.S. labor market, including jobs and wages, and the latest developments from the Aussie dollar. But first, of course, the big news was the S&P stepped up to the plate, and what came out of it?
It actually removed the plate and the Swiss franc jumped because nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition, and nobody expected this move from the Swiss National Bank. After over 3 years of having a floor of 120 under Euro Swiss, they just said, nah, not anymore.
Enough is enough!
They removed it, the Swiss franc jumped, that means Euro Swiss fell even below 1. Dollar Swiss that was above 1 fell below 90 cents. They did counter this move by setting negative rates, lowered the target rate to around minus 1%, and they are charging now 0.75% for banks that deposit money with the Swiss bank. They have a press conference that will be held after the show, and we'll hear a little bit more, but I think we already know why they do it.
So what is it? It's because what's up ahead for the ECB?
Yeah, I think that's the main reason. Let me quote just one sentence. Monetary policy divergence is set to continue. Or maybe that's my quote. Okay, this is a quote from the statement that came as a surprise decision from the S&B. Recently, divergences between the monetary policies of major currency areas have increased significantly, a trend that is likely to become even more pronounced. And the next sentence is the euro has depreciated considerably against the US dollar, and this goes on and on. So we can derive from the sentence that the S&B is expecting a big move from the ECB next week and decided to just... could not defend the cap. Another reason, but this has been talked about in the past and I see it as a minor reason, is that Russian money is flowing into Switzerland and is also making the cap hard to defend. But I think this specific move is clearly in anticipation of a huge move by the ECB on January 22nd.
So the recent plunge in the Euro-Swiss, this means that we can see it goes even further down in the coming days or something like that? Or this is just the worst and that's it, now we'll stabilize?
It's an excellent question. I think the Swiss National Bank will still continue intervening in markets and they'll try to stabilize the currency. Maybe they'll do it in a quieter way than in the past. But it's certainly, once again, the Swiss franc is free-floating, and that's really good news for currency traders. Welcome back, Swiss franc.
Yeah, so finally, it's something new and exciting that will happen to Swiss franc after being pretty much stagnant for the past, 3 years or so?
Yeah, this has been going on since September 2011.
So yeah, it's been a long time. So yeah, so now it's a little bit more interesting. And when it comes about to the Swiss franc, do you think that now it's became a little bit less stable? Well, obviously, now, but looking forward, it will become a little bit more erratic than what happened up to now, or you think that after a while it will remain the calm waters that it has been in the past several years or so?
Well, in recent months, since the euro began falling against the US dollar, we had Euro-Swiss very close to 120. It was extremely calm, so we're definitely not going back to these days. Now, we have to look back at the days in 2011 before the cap came into place, before the floor came in. into place. And I think we'll see an even more volatile environment now because markets are now more volatile. I think we can begin, Forex traders that ignored the Swiss franc for a very long time can begin looking into this once again.
All right. So when it talks about the Swiss, the Euro-Swiss, we have to talk about ECB's next move. So what's your guess? What's your estimates? Where do you think the chips will fall in the next meeting?
I think they'll present a program without specifying a number. There were reports that they prepared a program worth 500 billion euros, which means buying bonds according to GDP, but this excludes Greek bonds. It's important to remember that elections in Greece are held just 3 days after the ECB decision, but I'm not sure that Draghi will announce a number, just a big QE program. The really big bomb for the euro would be an unlimited program style QE3, such as buying bonds on a monthly basis without setting a predetermined end date. That would be a real killer. I'm not sure they're bold enough to do that. I think eventually they will release a number, and in this meeting they'll just say it'll be big enough. Market expectations stand at 500 billion, and that's basically priced in. If we get a 1 trillion, that will be also a big bomb that'll hurt the euro, and if we get under 500 billion, we could see a buy the rumor, sell the fact, means the euro would go up in this case.
Okay, and what do you think it will have any ramification on the Swiss franc then? If actually Draghi will come up with a number that'll be pretty high, let's just speculate now, you think that they'll have some significance also on the Swiss franc and SNB's future plans for the Swiss franc?
Yeah, I think Swiss National Bank has shown that it can set an even lower negative deposit rate than the ECB, and it could cut it even further in the next meeting. But I don't think that after this surprise move, an unscheduled move, they'll have another immediate reaction to the ECB, but they'll wait for their planned meeting in March to make another decision. So a big weakening of the euro could trigger another cut in the deposit rate, which is already negative in Switzerland. I don't think that after some stabilization that will happen today or tomorrow, or after tomorrow, we'll see further interventions by the SNB in the markets.
Okay. And this reminds me of what we talked about in the previous podcast about all the matter of debt and banks and how they intervene and how they try to actually put money into people's pockets and to companies, but they don't bite on it. This also, we can also talk about it again when we look at what ECB plans to do. I mean, if banks are actually get quote-unquote fined for keeping their money in the ECB and not spreading it around, then this means that they should have actually put in money into the economy and see a little bit more progress and maybe eventually see a little bit more inflation. But this hasn't happened. So do you think that if ECB will actually ramp up and does implement a QE that will be pretty hefty, let's say even a trillion or above 500 billion, then you think it will have any actual impact on inflation and will bring it back up and people will actually start to take on more debt?
Unfortunately, I think it'll only have a very marginal impact on the real economy via the money pumped into the markets. Most of it will just not reach the real economy. I do see an indirect effect by a lower value of the euro. So if we have an even lower euro dollar, lower euro pound, lower euro yuan, will have better exports and import inflation. This is the biggest impact. Draghi has already achieved a lot in this sense. The next moves just depend on how big the QE program will eventually be.
All right. Turning from Europe, let's turn back to oil. This is on everybody's mind. So where oil is heading, now it's around $47 on Thursday, January 15th. People already start to estimate, oh, it's going to go down to $30. It's going to go down to $40.
Really? $30?
Yeah. Everybody talking, you know, riding the trend, man. Remember back in 2008, I think, oil prices went to $120, $130. Everybody said, yeah, it's going to $150, $160. Just riding the trends. And nobody expected they'll plummet so rapidly. And by the end of the year, it'll reach $38. So
yeah, do you think it's a competition between analysts to see who gives the highest number, or in this case the lowest number?
Everybody just trying to shoot up a number. They don't care, it go up, it go down. just riding the trends, it's the easiest way, you know. If oil has gone down to 47, oh, it's going to go to down 40. Who's going to remember that, you know? Everybody thinking that it's going to go down, so why not just ride a trend? It's much easier than actually come up with a different point of view. We won't try to speculate, even though we will speculate later on, but this is not the main idea. The main idea is to see what is actually happening in the oil market. I think we have a little bit more input to put on that, and let's start with where everything has gone quote-unquote wrong. Saudi Arabia, everybody put this country as the culprit. Yochai, before we put into some numbers into this discussion, what do you think? You think Saudi Arabia is actually the big mover and shaker of this oil market?
Yeah, I think by them taking a decision to keep on producing and force this decision on OPEC, we had the oil plunge, no?
So to a certain extent, that's right. I think when it comes to production, by the way, it's not that they've ramped up production. Their production remained pretty stable. It should be taken with a grain of salt, but according to OPEC and the IEA, you see that their production hasn't gone up. It's around 9.6 million barrels per day of oil and 11.6 for total petroleum liquids. But the thing is that they have offered oil at a much lower prices, and this is something that has reduced prices. What I want to look at, we have these numbers, we know that Saudi Arabia is a major player. Everybody talk about how Saudi oil is much cheaper than US oil.
In terms of cost.
Yeah, in terms of cost per barrel. And I heard people say, oh, it's roughly $10, it's nothing for them, they produce it in $10 and that's it, and the US is around $60. $70 or something to that effect. I've tried to actually come up with that number, and it's not an easy task because Saudi Arabia, their company is Saudi Aramco. That's the company that actually produces Saudi oil. They don't provide this information offhand, at least in their websites or whenever I try to look at it. But the EIA, the US Energy Information Administration, did a survey. It's a little bit dated, from 2009, but still give us a little bit of indication, and they showed that in the Middle East, the cost of an upstream, it means lifting up and finding oil, back then it was around $17 in the Middle East, while in the US it ranges, on average it's around $33 back then, and if it's onshore it's around $32, if it's offshore it's $51. So obviously now that the offshore has gone up, probably the average in the US has gone rapidly up, and also it means that offshore is even more expensive than $50 now than it was back in 2009. It's not $10, it doesn't look like $10, at least on average in the Middle East, and that's where Saudi Arabia is, but it looks like it could be around $20, $22, something like that. So it's pretty cheap, yeah. So Saudi Arabia can afford for now to have oil at $47.
Do you think they can afford to sell oil at a losing price in order to hit the competition?
Well, but if you look at, again, we don't have the exact numbers of what it costs to them, but at face value, it looks like it's going to be around $20, $25. So for them, they actually still make a profit on it, but not as hefty as they used to. You are right. They don't have high debt, but they do have higher debt than what they had back in 2009 when oil prices came rapidly down. Their debt to GDP is around 19%, but the government budget is still in a surplus of 6.4% to GDP. So it's not they're gonna hemorrhage a lot of cash. They're still doing very well. It still means that now that all their revenue has gone down, they could see their budget going, this budget surplus going down, and the debt to GDP also started to pick up again. It's not as if they're in Venezuela's shoes, but still, it's probably gonna hurt a little bit for them as well. It's not like they're brushing it off. By the way, the other thing to consider is also that we keep seeing estimates from the big, the IMF, World Bank, keep revising down their economic outlooks. Have you checked that out, Yochai?
Yeah, from 3.4 to 3.0.
3%, yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah, they've just the World Bank just revised down their economic outlook. By the way, for the U.S., it's actually gone up a little bit, from 3% to 3.2%. They still think that the U.S. will actually do much better in 2015 than in 2014.
Yeah, I'm also optimistic despite that retail sales report that we received yesterday. But I think the U.S. economy will bump up. Yeah, but that's another story.
Another story. Yeah, but by the way, what Saudi Arabia is trying to achieve is to cut down on U.S. oil production. And it seems that it does have already a little bit of an impact, because the EIA just recently released its monthly outlook, and it does expect that U.S. oil drilling activity will decline, because many companies, quote-unquote, will redirect investment from marginal exploration and research drilling and into core areas of major tight oil plays. So basically means that, yeah, they'll probably invest less in offshore drilling, and probably will see the major oil drilling companies will reduce their capital expenditures on future production. It doesn't mean that will have much of an impact this year, by the way, because they still think that oil output in the U.S. will rise by an average of 8% compared to 2014. It does sound a little bit big, by the way, but it means that it'll be around 9.32 million barrels per day. But now the current output is around 9.1. So it means that from the average of 2014 to the average of 2015, it will be 8%, but from now, it's only 2% bump. So yeah, I could see actually growth will taper down as soon as all producers will start to adjust to the low prices. And this will be what Saudi Arabia has expected. That's what they're trying to do. They margin out the little players, all the little companies that are not the big ones, not the Chevron and Exxon. They cannot fight with them, but they can try to force them to reduce their capital expenditures. And the small oil drilling companies, the ones that are worth $1 billion or even less, take them out of business. That's basically it.
What I've heard so far is that oil production in North Dakota just reached another peak. Producers are just drilling more out of the best wells and shutting down some of the less profitable ones. So far it's triggering the right kind of consolidation, but of course this might change in the near future. If prices remain low, we could see North Dakota producers squeezed a little bit more.
Yeah, and now that we've done with the analysis, let's go to the cherry on top, and that's what our guess where oil is heading. So Yochai, what's your guess? What do you think oil is will be heading in the near term and in the little bit more midterm?
I think that it'll do some kind of what's called a fake breakout or fake out, just under 40, touch 39 or 38 or so, and bounce immediately back up. And eventually, for some time, we'll have a stabilization around current prices of 45 before prices gradually and quietly go back up to 65 or something like that. How is that for a guess?
Yeah, that's pretty good, man. That sounds very reliable. You're a future head out for you on as a pundit in CNBC. That's for sure.
Yeah, I also thought of that. Yeah.
CNBC. Yeah, there we go. That's the next stop after this podcast. Yeah, and okay, so we talked about oil.
What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's the same way. I think also it will probably remain around $40 for quite some time until middle of the year or so. And then when the actual impact of the U.S. oil producers taper down their growth in production, we'll see that there is a little bit of an impact, and we'll see oil prices start to crawl back up. Eventually, we'll see oil coming up. I think by the end of the year, we'll see oil at around $60. But yeah, that's my guess as well. We'll revisit this issue as there are new developments in oil. And turning from that, let's head back to the U.S. and the labor market. So we had last week, we had the non-farm payrolls. This week, we had the JOLTS reports. So were you impressed, Yochai, with the recent non-farm payroll reports?
Yeah, I think the ongoing trend, I think that the trend is going on as planned. We had 252,000 jobs gained in December and upwards revisions worth 50,000, especially if you look at November, the final number or almost final is 353,000. That's in line with this very strong JOLTS, which was just under 5 million. That's the good news. The bad news, and I was really, really surprised, was that wages actually dropped 0.4% or rose only 1.7% year over year. I was really not expecting that. I still expect a bump up in wages in January thanks to minimum wage upgrades, automatic ones, and new ones introduced by law, annual wage increases, and a return to normal after the holiday season. So I still expect a wage increase. I'm talking about this all the time. And of course, I was terribly wrong, at least up to now.
Well, you were right when it comes to the number of jobs added. You said 250 and you were almost on the nose on that.
Oh, yeah. Spot on. Yeah.
That's a boon for you. So that's good.
Yeah. I'll write it in my CV or something.
Yeah, there we go. When you apply to the CNBC anchor job. And when you look at the unemployment rate, are you still, when you look at it, okay, you say 5.6%, but the real one, which has gone down, that's right, it's 11.2, right? That's the U6.
Right.
Do you think that actually people feel that the U.S. labor market has improved when you look at the added jobs, the rate of unemployment going down?
Of course it has improved because it's not a one-off, and we're seeing big level of jobs gained, nearly 3 million in 2014. We're seeing ongoing debates about the minimum wage. That means it's now moving to salaries, not only about finding a job. There is improvement. It's just still painfully slow in terms of number of jobs, and more importantly, in terms of wages. Eventually, there will be some kind of acceleration. We did see an acceleration in number of jobs gained, still not in wages. I think that people do feel it. Many are frustrated, and it does vary a lot between different skill sets and different states. For example, in Silicon Valley, they're seeing a shortage of workers and super high wages, and also in Wall Street. On the other hand, I guess that the oil sector is going to suffer a bit, and people working in services are still restaurants, hotels, things like that are still seeing frustratingly low wages. So it's very uneven, very uneven.
And when you look at wages, it hasn't done anything since 2009. I mean, we're talking about 5 years now that the growth rate of the average hourly earning has gone around between 1.5 to 2.3%, something like that. So it's a long way from the 3.5% that was back in 2007 or even 2008. For a brief while, it was around 3%. So I think that this is another crucial thing, as you said, that will also a little bit alleviate some of the debt that people are paying, because if they will see higher wages, they could actually pay off a little bit more their the debt and start to jumpstart the economy. This is another thing that also put the hinges on the progress of the U.S. economy. When you look at on the job levers, are you also you see that also there is improvement there? Because I think last time I've checked, this number has gone up as well. It's still pretty low. It's around 9.1% job levers as a percent of total unemployment. It's still far off from the 11-12% that was in 2006, 2007. And I think this is another important figure, right, Yochai?
Yeah, but I follow the JOLTS report and the quits section of this report. So it has slid from the highs from 2.7 to 2.6 million, more or less. But it's still high levels last seen, 10 years ago or something like that. So that keeps me optimistic, because when people quit jobs, they usually go for higher salaries, and they also feel confident if they're able to voluntarily quit their job. Yeah, but as you said, the path is still too long.
Yeah, there is improvement. I'm not saying that. That's what I've always been saying, that we see improvement. It's still not in a good place. There's still a lot of way to go. And even though the numbers that when you look at the headline, 250,000 jobs added, that's pretty impressive. But I think that when it comes to wages, when it comes to job leavers, it still has a long way to go before we'll feel more confident in saying that the U.S. labor market has progressed. And where do you think it's going when it comes to the progress of the labor market and its relation with the U.S. dollar?
Well, there is a correlation via the central bank, because the improvement of the labor market is one of the mandates of the Federal Reserve. And as the economy improves, the employment situation improves, there is a growing chance of rate hikes. So it has a positive impact on the US dollar. So the employment is the positive thing for the US dollar. Well, the second mandate, inflation, is now the current worry for the US dollar. So far, inflation in the United States is relatively stable, especially core inflation. And even if headline inflation falls because of oil prices, there's still a strong economy, a strong labor market to support that. That's the optimistic view. But if oil prices fall too much, it could hurt the economic growth, it could hurt the oil industry, and then also weaken other components of inflation, so that could delay a rate hike. In general, strong employment, worrying inflation, that's the picture currently for the Federal Reserve and consequently for the US dollar.
All right, that's cool. And turning from the U.S., let's see what's going on in the down under, the Aussies. So we had some interesting labor related reports and some figures. So what do you say? What do you do?
Yeah, well, we had another big gain of jobs in Australia, over 30,000, and an upgrade of last month's number. All in all, it's the best 2-month gain since 2006. However, we had issues with the reporting of labor figures in Australia in the summer. Well, in the Australian winter, in July and August 2014. So some analysts just don't believe these numbers. Unemployment rate has risen in comparison to previous years, but has fallen now back to 6.1%. Currently, the market does believe the numbers, and the Australian dollar has gone up. Another factor that boosted the Aussie was building approvals that leaped 7%, and that was reported last week. All these figures helped the Australian dollar escape from the 80 cent level against the US dollar. However, on the other side, we have China, and worries about growth in China, which are, of course, ongoing for a few years. All the soft landing, hard landing talk is, of course, weighing on the Australian dollar. And the recent impact, negative one on the Australian dollar, was the big plunge in the price of copper.
Yeah, copper has gone down. Iron ore is still also not doing so well. And also the recent report from the World Bank also revised down China's economic outlook for 2015 from 7.5% to 7.1%. So this is also something that probably not going to do well for the Aussies.
Do you think that copper and iron are going to fall even more?
Well, the current outlook is that copper will remain pretty stable, but actually the big Australians, it's Rio Tinto and BHP, try to make a little bit of a move, as I recall, and they try to corner the markets. I don't know where they're heading with that. As far as I read, it's they're trying to corner the market, but I don't think they're doing so well with that, and it's a little bit more a prolonged process. It's not something that are doing it from now to a minute to minute. But yeah, for now, the copper market, yeah, it doesn't look so well for it. And as long as China continues to contract, or not contract, sorry, I'll scratch that, just grow at a slower pace, it's probably gonna hinder on the copper and all the other big metals, iron ore also, that's not gonna do well as well. And that's not doesn't vote well for the Aussies. Where do you see the Aussie dollar going forward from now?
I think it's going to fall. It's going to resume its falls eventually because of the Chinese slowdown, because of global deflation, because the Reserve Bank of Australia wants it met 75 cents. And eventually that's going to happen either via rate cuts or more talk, or it's just going to happen on its own thanks to the other factors, thanks to rate hike in the United States and more Chinese slowdown. So I think it's a bumpy road, but the general direction remains down for Aussie against the US dollar throughout 2015.
Okay, that's it. That's our show for today. Thank you, as usual, Yochai.
Thank you, Lior. I hope we have lots more excitement like we have with the Swiss National Bank every day.
All right. Yeah. Who do you want me to call to push down maybe a rate hike, rate bump, whatever you want? To call Draghi next time?
Yeah. Although he's doing very well on his own. He recently said that Something like Germany should know that the ECB works for all the Eurozone and not only for one country. Not exactly in these words, but
no.
Anyway, I'm pleased from his verbal performance of late, so I really can't complain.
Yeah, you can't complain about that, and hopefully you'll have some big news for all of us next week. So thank you as usual for all of you for listening. Give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. You can subscribe to the show via Stitcher, email RSS, or iTunes, whatever suits you fancy. So until next week, this is Lior signing off for you. Hi, saying have a great week and invest responsibly.
This podcast should be used for educational, research, and informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. There are no guarantees expressed or implied of future positive returns in regard to the subject matter contained herein. Understand the risks inherent in investing before making the decision to invest or consult an investment professional for more information. Reasonable due diligence has been performed in regards to the information in this podcast. However, the hosts and guests of this podcast expressly disclaim any liability for accidental omissions of information or errors in fact. For comments, suggestions, and questions, visit the podcast page at forexcrunch.com or tradingnrg.com, where you can also find past episodes and subscribe to the show. Our listeners make market movers possible.